Hello, everyone. Welcome to the third episode of the Love in the Mirror podcast. And I am your host, Shannon Bodie, Director of Inner Peace Rising. This episode, What's Weighing You Down, really starts to look at mental patterns and energy. And it's one of those organic conversations that I learned so much from. Our guest talks about her own journey with depersonalization disorder and all the skills that came out of that journey for her to cut out some of the mental patterns that weren't serving her, but to do it in a really beautiful and compassionate way. So she met herself with grace first, and then she was able to address some things that she now takes into her coaching practice. Let's learn from Cindy Marshall today together. Welcome to Love in the Mirror. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us again with Love in the Mirror. I'm Shannon Bodie, Director of Inner Peace Rising. And today my guest is health coach Cindy Marshall. And we're talking about what's weighing you down. And this could mean so many things. But when we're trying to make positive changes in our lives, many of us are looking at areas where we feel there's extra weight that we're carrying. It might be physical. It might be emotional or spiritual. It might be mental. And Cindy, in my experience, has been a delightful support in helping to let go of just the things that are no longer serving me. And I know that she serves her community and her clients well in this topic. So you're going to walk away with a lot of gems, a lot of unique tips and strategies from Cindy. And I'm going to let her discuss her expertise in this, and we'll get into our conversation. So, Cindy, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Shannon. It's a pleasure to be here, and I feel honored to be here, and feel honored to share what I've, you know, learned. And I'll just start by telling you a little bit about my background. So I originally went to school to become an artist and an art teacher, and I do have degrees in those things. And I did that for many years and worked with a lot of kids in the community. And my husband and I started a restaurant right before our second daughter was born, and it's a brick oven pizzeria, artisan style kind of pizzeria here in Missoula, Montana, and it's called Biga Pizza. And that's been something that we've done together. He has taken the brunt of most of the work in that recently.
It's a lot of work.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
It is a ton of work. It's like the little engine that could. It's a little pizzeria, but it's very busy. And then I became a certified health coach I wasn't certified until this past August. So I'm kind of new to this field. I did grow up in a household where my mom was a big advocate of nutrition. Like we were the health food nuts at our school in Wisconsin. Mm. My mom would come in and teach all the kids how to grow and make their own sprouts and teach them about whole wheat. And we had a 1 acre garden. And she healed us with herbs. And so I always had that in my pocket. And I did go to massage school as well, a healing arts school in Northern California called Heartwood Institute. So I did have those in the tapestry of who I was, but I didn't realize how much I was going to need to access those until my own health struggles came. So that's a little bit of my background.
I love it. Thank you for sharing all the pieces, because what I love is I think sometimes we can get caught up on our credentials, quote unquote, but that every life experience, you know, from your mother's healing medicine to what it's like to get a restaurant off the ground and to parenting and to how do you pull that beautiful artistic passion and training into your coaching? Like I hear all of those pieces when I work with you, and that each one of those life experiences is a really valuable credential. And so I think we can get hung up on that sometimes. And it's like,
yeah, I do too. And they're labeled
tapestry, as you said. I love that tapestry version. Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that about art too. And I also played in bands for 15, 20 years, maybe even 20 years. And so music is another piece of me, but I never think of myself as an artist or a musician. It's and I always thought of this with guitar, because I'm a guitar player. It's just a piece of wood with some strings on it, you know, and you press it and it makes a sound. And same with cooking, because cooking's a big part of my life too. And people tend to put like artists and cooks and musicians up on these pedestals, and when we all have access to those within ourselves. And it's just another way to express yourself. And if we think of it as, oh, I'm not an artist, or I'm not a musician, or I have to be in this category or this label, and that doesn't define who I am, then we really limit ourselves. So with art and music and really and writing, it's just another way to express yourself. And I just highly encourage people, as they explore these ways to express themselves, that they don't get too caught up on the fact that they're not this or that. And I'm teaching my kids that all the time, because I want them to just have as many routes of to be able to express themselves as possible, whether that be, you know, and you can express yourself in the way you dress. You could be an artist just by the way you dress. You can be an artist just by the way you cooked breakfast and then you displayed it on your plate. You know, it doesn't have to be this mystical thing that you have to go to college for, you know?
Exactly. And I love what you said, you know, that it's within all of us. We just get to find how to express it. And each person is going to find their own beautiful, unique inroads to that. Mm-hmm. And when I look at that with regard to what we're talking about today of helping, and it might be helping clients. It might be, you know, as you said, this journey for you, right? I think, a lot of us in the coaching field and the helping fields came to this, I know I did, from a place of first needing to address some of my own unique story and finding ways to do that more skillfully, right? So especially around the area of quote unquote extra weight, mm-hmm. right? How did you come to help yourself, help clients in your coaching practice, you name it, your family, around issues of weight, things that we're carrying that we don't need anymore?
Well, I'll start by saying, I think we all teach best what we want to learn most. And it isn't sometimes until there's a forcing function or a forcing issue that that make us get, you know, that force us into the desperation to heal ourselves. You know, that's where we get the motivation. Because we're in pain. And I think ultimately we all are trying to have less pain and experience more joy and pleasure in our life. And that avoidance of pain is a real motivator. And for me,
isn't it? It sure is. Yeah.
I first struggled. So the extra weight for me, it was a mental weight. And, physically, because I was raised in a really healthy environment, and because there was five kids and we were really poor, so there wasn't a lot of food. Yeah. And then my mom was anti-packaging. So like there was like lots of jars of beans in our house growing up, you know, but in terms of like snacks, it was like go in the garden and grab some chives. Honestly, like that's literally what my mom would say. So I didn't have to worry about the physical weight as a kid. And I mean, now that I'm almost 48, yeah, it's different, you know, hormones to do some quirky stuff, but my weight came in the form of a mental imbalance. And it started for me, and it may have started a lot sooner than this, but it started for me in high school. And so what I struggled with then, and I still struggle with now, or not really struggle with, I'm going to say it's my checks and balances. And it's in a way, it's my reminder to be in a balanced, like to seek balance. So it's my reminder to always seek balance is, back then I did not know what the term for this was called, because it actually was not even in the DSM. Like it wasn't actually a disorder that had been named yet. And so the doctors didn't understand what was wrong with me either. But when I was 15, so what it's called is depersonalization disorder. Mm. And I looked online to see if there was a good, because sometimes it's hard to explain to people exactly what depersonalization disorder sure. is. And this was a pretty good definition. It was the first one that came up when I did a Google search right before this call.
I love that. I love when the first one works.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, because the Wikipedia one can get really trippy and it almost trigger me actually. Mm. So I like this first one. It was the persistent feeling of observing oneself from outside one's body or having a sense that one's surroundings aren't real. And it's called depersonalization disorder. It's actually the second most common symptom next to anxiety. It's something like if you were in a car accident or if someone told you some really shocking news or if you got hurt really bad, I mean, or anything like that, like it's a normal response. But when it becomes persistent and then the chronic version comes in, that's when the trouble begins.
Sure.
And people will often say that it feels like you're in a dream, but like you can't wake up.
Oh, that's a great description.
Yeah. If anyone's ever done like LSD or something like that, they'll be able to relate to this feeling. But it would be like the next day, all your friends are back to normal and you're still tripping. So
it's like you're not in your body. Like, is that a
yeah,
fair?
You're just out of your body.
Like you just can't get in your body.
Exactly. And
okay.
You know, I like to think of it as something positive. It's actually a defense mechanism. Your body's trying to protect you from something. And it's so it learns this way to kind of help you. But yes. Unfortunately, it doesn't feel helpful at all. And it feels like an absolute nightmare, you know? Mm. When I first dealt with this, I was 15 and I was in high school. And there was basically a perfect storm of hormones, because hormones, I had come to find out much later that hormones can play a really big role in this for me.
Absolutely.
So it was kind of the perfect storm of hormones. And then I had smoked marijuana.
As many people in high school do, right? Dealing with all of those things.
Yeah.
High school and beyond. Yeah.
Actually, I found out 20 years later that people who are just naturally highly sensitive in general, and then you mix in the hormones, and I was always really sensitive to things. And I think it's because I was raised so cleanly, like without yes. prescription drugs, and even we didn't even have, like, I think we had some aspirin or something in the house, but like maybe like, I think we still have a full bottle. Like, it, you know, I was like that. So no one used that. So I think a combination, but come to find out 20 years later that a lot of people who get depersonalization disorder get it from smoking marijuana or doing acid or LSD.
Okay. Okay.
So it kind of like is the trip, you know, it flips the switch.
Okay.
And, but maybe they were already susceptible, or because once the brain learns that neural pathway, that's the whole trick, is to try to sort of unlearn it. And it's really hard to unlearn something while you're mid, like, you know, freak out.
Yes. And I would pause there just to give our listeners some context too. I thank you, because I know there's more that you mentioned this as a coping, as a defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that when I love that you said that neural pathway happens, for whatever reason it happens, it might be because of a drug interaction or a hormonal interaction, but it also might be our body's natural response to fear, trauma, protection of we're going to check out just a little bit. Or, you know, there's lots of different language for that. It might be a dissociating or gosh, where did I go? For some folks, it might feel a little bit like an automatic pilot that you can't come back from. But it is a defense that we can usually thank our nervous system for in some way, because that's all our little nervous system knows what to do with at the time is, oh, this is too much. We're going to check out just a little bit. Does that feel accurate?
Yeah. And a lot of people who get this also, either they also or instead of doing the drugs and alcohol, like they learn it.
Absolutely.
Because of severe abuse.
Absolutely.
So it's there to help, but it sure doesn't feel like it.
Which so many defense mechanisms start to feel like extra weight, right? Mm-hmm. Like, gosh, I needed this at the time. I wouldn't have chosen it, but now this isn't serving me anymore, right? How do I come
back exactly. From that? I went to a workshop recently with my husband, and it was like we actually had to write down ourselves, like the ways that we self-sabotage and where we learned them.
Yes.
And it's like, oh, I learned to like be critical of everyone as my way of never having to get to know them. And so like I reject them before they reject me. This was just like one of the ones that I wrote down.
Yeah.
And it was like, this was my way of protecting myself. But then at one point, you know, we actually like held our little list to our heart and said like, thank you for being here and for protecting me to help me avoid pain all those years, but I don't need you anymore, you know? And it was kind of neat. We like switched lists, and I had to be the keeper of his self-sabotage patterns and not use them against him. Like these were the weight, you know, this was this extra weight, like you talked about, these were the things that you needed at the time to help you keep safe.
Absolutely.
And now you may or may not need them anymore, but I'm not going to use them against you if you need to use them. I'm just going to acknowledge that, oh, this is one of the things that you've acknowledged as something that you created to keep you safe when you needed it.
What a beautiful expression and practice in relationship with someone too, of any relationship.
Yeah. Like, especially because you don't always see
that vulnerably sharing those.
What, your defense mechanism?
Yes.
And he was like, I don't have any, you know? And I was like, wait a second.
Like, I know you.
Want some help coming up with your list? You know, you got to do it in a really loving way.
And absolutely.
Like, yeah, this is one of the ways that I've seen you check out. And it gets intense when you have family dynamics and things too with teenagers. And sometimes it's easier to work, you know?
Absolutely. Like, it becomes another perfect storm in which to go right back into those patterns. So the fact that you two could lovingly reflect those back to each other and say, I see this, you know? Yeah.
And I acknowledge that you needed it at the time and that sometimes you might still need it. But like the fact that you can separate yourself and say, that's not really me anymore. That's kind of my old me, and my new me can actually show up. And if I'm going to use that example I used earlier of rejecting other people before they can reject me, the new me has a deeper foundation of love. And so my self-worth doesn't hinge on whether someone likes me or not. So I can be more open now with other people, you know, and I don't need that old defense mechanism anymore because I have a base of love for myself. So it's not going to like tip, if they don't like me, it's not going to like tip the scales, you know, and bring me back to like, we're unworth, you know, just worthlessness, because there's already a foundation there that's built. So nothing, the house won't get, you know, blown over.
And what I respect beyond measure is the journey that 15-year-old Cindy took to this, as you said, almost 48, here I am, of learning. There had to be some ways that you learned to fortify so you could come back to center, like you said, that deep love and connection. That you know that that's your foundation now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you can recognize when the extra weight gets picked up again with those old mental patterns, or maybe it's a self-sabotaging belief, or when you start to feel that watching yourself outside of your body again, that depersonalization. What took you? What did you learn so that you could see that pattern and address it when it came up or as soon as possible?
Well, I do want to just, before I talk about what I learned, I just want to give the listener a little bit more background.
Thank you. Yes. So they really get it.
Because I tend to go off on tangents. I just like talking, I guess, and communicating and connecting.
That's why and I there's a podcast. Just a lot. It's great.
You know, yeah. Our lives are rich with lots of things.
Yes.
And so I'm enjoying just playing off of your insights too. And, but I wanted to say that, you know, after that initial experience of depersonalization, in which I was hospitalized in a psychiatric ward, and then it took me about a year to recover from that. And I didn't actually know what it was. So I literally thought that maybe I was crazy, but then I just somehow overcame the craziness, but it was always inside of me. And that first time, was really intense, but I didn't smoke marijuana after that because I thought maybe I was just allergic to marijuana, was my other theory.
Okay.
And then I was actually like relatively okay for 15 years. And I would get a symptom here or there. And what I realized from that first time was that I, you know, panicking, like totally panicking, actually strengthened that neural pathway. And if I would have been, and how it did that was that I triggered a full on, you know, sympathetic nervous system response, like flight or fight, you know? And yes. So my body was like, oh, this is important. Like every cell in my body was engaged and every mechanism in my body was engaged. And I knew that that probably was one of the things that solidified it in my body. So over the 15 years, if I did get a sensation, and, you know, just playing in bands for so many years, there was a lot of people around me smoking marijuana. And sometimes
yes.
just the smell of it could trigger me. Or if I was like premenstrual or ovulating, I knew I was like really affected at certain times. So I knew it had a lot to do with hormones. So then if that was happened, I would just like go right to bed, or I'd watch a movie. And I realized like, just as long as I stayed in my parasympathetic nervous system, my rest and digest, yes. I was able to get it into this chronic persistent. So I could just like ride it out. And then it wasn't until 2009. And it was that I first, like it wasn't until 2009 after I had my daughter. So another hormonal time. And I yes. did have a home birth that was pretty tough. And physically it was really painful. And so I think, you know, that my body was also trying to protect me by like leaving, for me to like leave my body. And so it did come back. And again, I didn't realize, and that really scared me because now I had a baby to take care of. And I was out of my body. And yes. so that was really terrifying.
And the stakes really went up, right?
The stakes went up. And yeah. so my desire to get better, because I literally was like, oh my gosh, am I going to have like my daughter take? I mean, I didn't know. Like I'd only had that one experience of like being basically locked up. And so I was like, okay, I can't let that happen again. And I literally healed myself by repeating one affirmation over and over again, like all, like just out loud. And I just kept, and basically what that did, as I then in the future finally figured out what was going on with me, I looked back and I said, wow, why did that work? And it's because I kept my brain distracted, because what happens with depersonalization is you get stuck on this hamster wheel of obsession of why is this happening? Why is this happening? Is it there? Is it there? And you keep checking to see if you're yes. in your body or out of your body. Mm. And it's this really vicious cycle. And yes. so repeating this affirmation want to give me something else where like, just gave me somewhere for the adrenaline to go. And so I just channeled it through that. And I was able to like recover after about a year. And then it wasn't until my second daughter was born. We had the restaurant and we'd opened the restaurant 3 months before the second daughter was born. And then my sister moved here with two young kids who were 2 and 3, and my kids were 2 and 3. So this was like, you know, this was 2009 now. So I think originally when I told you 2009, that was wrong. It was when my daughter was born at 2005 that I had the first relapse. And then in 2009 was this second relapse. And I basically at that point realized, I found out that it was called depersonalization disorder and that it was incurable. And I think that really played into it taking me 8 years to get better at that point. So I had an eight year journey with it, 8 year relapse, which I literally thought I was stuck like that. And it was in my journey and search to find relief from my symptoms and also trying to parent two young kids. And yes. And while my husband worked like 80 hours a week and we were running this really successful restaurant, it was in that journey and search that I realized that some things made it better and some things made it worse. And some of those things were like, meditation, like I joined a meditation group and going to these African dance classes because it was like, it's a complete sensory overload. So it could keep you from thinking.
Yes.
And then certain food habits, like I knew I couldn't have alcohol or caffeine is one of the worst things for people with a depersonalization disorder because it adds more adrenaline and anxiety back into your body. And then like I knew that realized certain people and places and routines and seasons and the moons and I started basically practicing the habits of Ayurveda, but I didn't realize they were the habits of Ayurveda,
yes,
which is a 5,000-year-old health system from India. And it's basically the habits of the yogis. And I started learning. My friend told me about Kate Stillman. And that's when I put it into a routine that finally was able to calm my autonomic nervous system. And then I was able to feel good enough. And then I was really called to help other people who are still in survival, because when you're in survival for that long and you finally feel better, you want to reach back and pull someone else up because, you know, that I kind of felt like it was part of my, my calling to do so. So there's the whole background.
And it's just, I just have so much respect for you did not give up in those, particularly those 8 years. And we call it like raising littles.
Oh my God.
That and being, and I heard there's community there, there was support there, but there was, with many of us, there are so many different elements of life. It's not like, well, I have 8 years to work on this pattern in myself and I'm going to, you know, give all my attention to my healing. And you came in, Cindy, with profound skills of, I just heard so much awareness, so much of being able to name and address the difference in mental state and that metacognition that, you know, or that obsession, as you mentioned, like, oh my gosh, is it coming back? Is it not? That not everybody, you know, who may enter something like this, you know, comes with, they don't, may not come in with those gifts and those skills. And that you used it, you channeled that, that, in, that the intensity of it into refusal to give up. And for your family.
Yeah. Like, honestly, there's so many people that I meet. They're like, I can't believe you healed yourself while you had little babies and my sister's kids to take care of a lot of the times.
Yeah.
And, honestly, and it's kind of like because of them is why I was really determined. But I mean, you can't even imagine unless you've dealt with depersonalization how excruciatingly exhausted you are and the amount of will. And I mean, it's like good days and bad days, but it really comes down to like, okay, here's a good moment. Here's a bad moment. It's like moment to moment. And, you have to dig so deep and you have to keep getting back up. It's like getting knock down 1,000 times a day.
And refusing and to stay there.
It's insane. Like, to actually keep finding that. And that's part of it is really what it comes down to with depersonalization is learning how to stop fighting. Because it's the fighting. It's this fighting of trying to like figure out what's wrong and figure out why this happened and figure out like these tools. And it can get so complicated as you search and search. And I spent thousands and thousands of dollars trying going to so many specialists and so many, you know, and it was actually, there's so many books and I'll tell you some of the tools here in a second. But one of the tools I learned was to do nothing. And it's actually when you stop trying to figure it out and stop asking why, that your body can finally relax enough. But it's really hard to do that because imagine like waking up, pretty much tripping on acid and needing to feed and clothe and get naps for kids and the screaming and the crying. And I had 2 back-to-back severely colicky babies.
Oh my goodness.
And you're totally sleep deprived. And then,
which is crazy making anyway.
You have to like do the paperwork for the restaurant. Like it's ridiculous. Like it's almost impossible with a sane mind. And then to drop off kids at preschools and pick them up and go to grocery stores with bright lights. Cause like, imagine just like tripping on acid with all these triggers coming at you, bright lights, you know, just, so many triggers everywhere, like you turn and that are pulling you farther and farther out of your body. And you have to continue to function. It's kind of like living in a nightmare.
Yeah.
And then to somehow find time to also heal and get better and learn new tools.
And what I would offer up as what you just described, like for so many of our listeners, so many of my clients over the last 20 years, that the effort of that and feeling mm-hmm. a little bit crazy or a lot most of the time, mm-hmm. and crazy is a very subjective term, but really knowing like, gosh,
oh yeah,
you know, putting on my shoes today is a big struggle, right? Or just mm-hmm. the day to day, as you said, with a sane mind or a sleep deprived mind of raising children, you name it, mm-hmm. you could be describing so many quote unquote conditions that manifest yeah. in the form of extra weight. If it's, you know, the exhausted caregiver who doesn't have time to address the literal weight that she's put on over the years because she doesn't have time to get out of the routines of taking care of everybody. If it's mm-hmm. the person who's struggling with depression or, you know, you mentioned anxiety, some very similar components to depersonalization. Or if it's, look, I know I have this constellation of limiting beliefs when it comes to doing well in my career or in my relationships or an abuse pattern, that exhaustion and dedication that finally lead you to, I have no choice but to address this with mm-hmm. whatever energy in my being. And you named some, you know, fantastic components. I just want to recap for folks that you found meditation. You found a very simple affirmation that you used for yourself. And these are all just ideas to plant for people. You mm-hmm. found, you know, consciously what you were putting in your body, the avoidance of, you know, substances that were going to impact your nervous system further, like alcohol and caffeine. You stopped fighting the pattern itself. Mm-hmm. And then you started to talk about Ayurveda a little bit, which I know that's where you and I share and learn some things. It's the whole constellation of support to be more balanced in your physical body and things like that. So I'm curious.
Yeah, that's like what it comes down to is balance.
Right.
And I will say one more thing. With my first daughter, I gained 60 pounds and I was just starting to like get on top of that and lose that. And then when I got pregnant while I had a 9-month-old baby, and I was severely nauseous that I had to eat in order to keep myself from throwing up. Like it was this really weird thing where I would dry heave if I didn't eat all day. Mm. So I actually gained 80 pounds with my second daughter. And I was over 200 pounds after I had her. And I had normally been 120, you know, for most of my life. And so it was,
so you went through all of that.
I actually also had the physical weight.
Yes.
It was like,
it matched.
It was just, if I look back, It was just the worst time in my life, you know? But Ayurveda, and I will say, like, I was out of balance. Okay. Mm-hmm. I was out of balance physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And I do believe in the body's ability to heal when we give it the right tools and support. Mm-hmm. And yes. One of my sisters, she actually was diagnosed with stage 3B cancer. And her journey with cancer helped, and I helped her. I was her support person. It's everything that I did to heal my mental imbalance. So it's like these same things that can help, you know, a mental imbalance can also help a physical imbalance. And most physical imbalances do have an emotional root anyway. Yes. So then it also heals, and so do mental imbalances. So, and I do believe that care.
Everything is connected, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're whole beings, you know, and I believe that care matters, but with depersonalization, it's not enough. Like, I had therapists being like, you know, I had so many people that cared and wanted to help me, but without the tools and the methodology and the accountability that comes with, when you're trying to like gain traction, you really need that accountability. And it helped me to start to get connected to some other people who are trying to heal their mental imbalances. Because when you're so easily turned around mentally and paranoid and desperate, it's hard to know what's working and what's not. And then you can give up so easily. And I gave up a gazillion times. Mm. I can't even tell you how many times I gave up.
Yeah.
I was at the lowest point in my life with this, and I literally wanted like someone to come and shoot me. Like, I'm not kidding.
It was that.
Like, I wouldn't have killed myself because I had these two children to raise and I knew I couldn't, but I wanted to die like every day. And it was that hard. But, you know, you talked about like what, I think you had asked me like what tools, or did you say,
yes.
What did you ask me earlier? And then I went off on this other tangent.
Well, just that. That what I hear too is the depth of how severe it was is also your greatest strength as you have learned these tools and use them to help others. And so if people are looking at that place,
I can deeply relate
with
compassion to people who deal with anything chronic.
What would you say, and what do you say to clients who are looking at, gosh, concrete steps? Now, knowing that everybody doesn't have the same journey or the same condition, but what were things that made the biggest difference for you, that also from that rich place of fuel and motivation, I'd say that deepest place, I've been there too for different reasons, of as much as it hurts is as powerful as the potential is for something different, right? So what brought you from there?
Yeah, I'll tell you like the things that brought me from there. And there are also tools that can help really everyone, because I think we're all anxious. We live in a, you know, a very modern world with so much technology and so much stimulation that we're all overstimulated. And so I think everyone's carrying extra weight in terms of what they bring in into their intellectual self and their mental self and their emotional self every day. And so, first of all, if you are struggling with depersonalization, I'll just say this one thing specifically to you, and that this is not a mental illness. It's just a response to prolonged stress and or a tired and exhausted mind. Mm. And where I got that from was Paul David wrote a book, At Last, A Life, and it really helped me. And he helped me realize that this was just a defense mechanism. And if you start looking at, if no matter what you're struggling with, whether it be physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual, start to note the things that make it better and the things that make it worse. And that's why I'm such an advocate of tracking or keeping a journal. And so I started to keep a scale. My husband helped me. He was kind of my support person, and I could let him know on a scale of 1 to 10 where I was at. So I was like, yeah, I'm at a 10. 10 would be, for me, a 10 was really bad. I mean, it meant that my depersonalization was all the way at the worst it could be, because there was times when, you know, there is a scale, and if you start to tune in and like, wow, I'm at a 10 right now. Okay. Right. I'm at a one. Okay. What brought me to a 10? What brought me to a one? Mm-hmm. And starting to track the things that made it better and the things that make it worse. And then you start stringing those together, so that you can start getting out of your sympathetic nervous system and start letting your body know it's safe to come back. And so at first I would avoid all of those triggers. I would, like, if I need to go outside, because lights can be really triggering, okay, I would wear sunglasses, or I would like watch a lot, you know, distractions can be really good. Like, give yourself permission to, like, in a way, this is kind of hard to say now, but I would be like, okay, what if I had to have fun with my recovery, like, and thought of it as like a depersonalization adventure. Okay, I get to watch movies, like, just whatever is going to get you, to the point of keeping your body in this relaxed state. And then later, once you get stronger, you can start facing those triggers using exposure therapy, and then, you know, facing the bright lit grocery store and things like that. But in the meantime, like, one of the hugest things for me was getting my hormones tested. Okay. And I took a 24-hour hormone urine analysis, and I realized my hormones were so off. And so that was really validating, you know? Yeah. And then I actually didn't use any medication. I used supplements to get myself back on. And for me, it was like, my, you know, looking at your vitamin D levels, magnesium levels, taking adrenal adaptogens, making sure you have your B vitamins, like B6, like the pantothenic acid was really key for me. Omega-3s, there was a lot more, like vitamin A was one of them. But when I started taking supplements to get my hormones balanced, suddenly I went from being at a 10 all the time to being like at a 6 or 7. So then I had more energy to start implementing other tools. And those other tools are, so first of all, I'll bring it back to something I said earlier about rebuilding my foundation of love for myself.
Yes, please.
Especially while I was broken. And I call it like the velveteen rabbit.
I love that.
It was like, I didn't become real. And because you feel like you're not real when you have depersonalization. Mm-hmm. You feel like you're, it's like the Truman Show, like everything's fake or you're fake.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
So I feel like I didn't become real until I learned how to love myself in this broken state. And I think that's true of whatever anyone's struggling with, to love yourself. So I would say I love and accept all of me, even my depersonalization. I love and accept and approve of myself exactly as I am right now. That was one of my, and I got that from Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. That book really helped me.
That's one of my favorites. So, I love that.
And then some more things, like avoiding the three P's. So I created this little avoid the three P's, which is pity, panic, and pessimism. So pity is one of the biggest traps if you're trying to overcome depersonalization or any disorder or any imbalance, because when you start feeling sorry for yourself, it's a hamster wheel that's really hard to get off of, and it can feed it, because it keeps you in this why me, which is dumping more adrenaline into your system.
And it keeps you out of solutions, right? It
keeps you out of solution, and it keeps you in your sympathetic nervous system.
Yes. Okay.
And so that's really key. And then pessimism, being like, I'm stuck like this forever. And that just keeps going around and around. And why did this happen to me? And I can't believe this is happening. And I just want to wake up. And why am I like this? And you have to actually do what Paul David calls, like, you just go like, so what? Like, you feel a sensation, so what? Mm-hmm. Feel the fear and do it anyway. Feel the sensation and do it anyway. If it's weight you're trying to lose, because I went through that too, feel fat and be in the class anyway, and just keep working out. Like, it's not about where you're at. It's about where you're going and getting on a trajectory that's going to give you the results in the future. And that 1% improvement every day, and focusing on that, just the 1%, you know,
yes.
And then the panic. So what I learned to do instead of panic is I actually move towards the panic mentally, like energetically. And it's like standing up to the bully, because the panic becomes your biggest bully. You have to keep energetically moving towards it. Like, what you got, you know?
Mm-hmm. I see.
Come on,
you.
Let's dance. You know, yes. You have to like, and that is how I started to fight it. So instead of fighting it by being like, wait, I gotta find out this other solution, and this worked for someone, I'm gonna try this avenue, and this specialist worked, you know, and I'm gonna try this and that. And you just go, and instead it's like, I just kept facing the fear and standing up to it. And so avoiding those three P's, and then so positive thinking, so to keep from being pessimistic, I created flashcards for myself based on all of the affirmations in Louise Hay's book, You Can Heal Your Life.
Yes.
So I'd say like the point of power is the present moment, like not a second ago, you know, it's right now. Like I just had all these affirmations that I would carry these flashcards around with me. I even made my own tapes. So I made like one that was called like, when you feel fear, when you feel scared, when you feel angry, because you get really angry sometimes too, that you're still stuck like this and you're trying so hard and then you have a relapse,
right? Yeah.
Or like it's better for a second and then it goes back. So that's why it's so important to create these little charts for yourself and track. And sometimes when I have a relapse, I just say, okay, I'm going to do one thing for myself every day. I go back to the 1%. And then each time you relapse and then recover and then relapse and then recover, you start to trust yourself that every time you fall off, you're going to be able to get back on again. And it's so terrifying, because each time you fall off with this kind of a disorder, you actually feel like you're stuck like that again forever. But you need a plan for relapse, because once your neural pathway learns that, like that's your new checks and balances.
Like, oh, we can do this.
It's going to come again.
We can get back on the horse, whatever the habit
is. But you have to kind of plan for it.
Yeah.
And it's going into the
part of the healing process, I would say.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's so important to, and each time, and I think of like this, you know, that emotional garden technique that I've done sometimes for people. And really what it is each time you touch that seed of fear with compassion and acceptance and tools, it's not the same seed of fear anymore. So to trusting that you're not going to be back to where you were, because now you have new tools and tricks, and now you have more understanding and awareness. Right. And so it's not the same fear. It's not the same panic attack. It's not the same relapse. So,
and I also there's no way then from that place to be, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm back here all over again. There's always a new layer of wisdom or proof
there
for
is,
your mind
except
and your nervous
for some
system
reason
that
when
you've
you're,
done it.
It
doesn't
you,
feel like that
happens,
when you're in it. It doesn't feel like it.
No, when this first happens, and that's why you have to actually, because when you're in flight or fight, you have adrenaline pumping through your body like that. It's really hard to remember your tools. Like it's almost impossible. It's like your memory. So what I did was I actually created a depersonalization recovery kit for myself.
Wonderful.
And all I had to do was remember to like pull the string, you know. It was like, all I knew that I had to do was to open the kit. And then it was like leaving. I don't know if you've ever watched the movie Memento. I think that was what it was called.
Where he has the tattoos to remind
the
himself
tattoos,
of who he is.
It was,
yeah.
It honestly is like that. And it's like you have to leave yourself a tattoo to remember what to do, because you will not remember it in the moment with this disorder.
And then you don't beat yourself up for not remembering it.
No. And
it's
it was like, Cindy,
not to. Yeah.
This is what you need to do. I literally have, it would be all ready for myself, because I had had so many relapses and recoveries that I started to get smart after about the 100th one. And so I started to create this kit over this time. And this is what I eventually want to sell to people.
Wonderful.
And I want to create for people. And when I first met yogahealer.com, Kate Stillman, and learned the, you know, these habits of Ayurveda, and it was all habits I was already doing, but it helped me put the whole thing together and to stop searching. Because it's that searching that was keeping me on the hamster wheel.
Yes.
It was then that that I realized I could put them all into a routine, and that routine, a routine that's going to lower your cortisol levels, right? Your stress hormone.
Yes.
It's going to raise your serotonin levels, your neurotransmitter that tells you all is well in the world. It's like your well-being. Lower your adrenal fatigue because it's that adrenaline that's pumping through your body that's keeping you in this heightened state. And, you know, so you're getting that from meditation, from the sun is so important for healing hormones, with your diet, with exercise, which is going to lower those your adrenaline. It's going to lower your cortisol levels, and it's going to increase your endorphins, those feel-good hormones. So all of these things, it helped me say, okay, you know what? I'm going to stop searching and I'm just going to go back to nature and circadian rhythms. And I'm going to get my body in line with nature, and I'm going to give it the best possible foundation to heal out of. And that's really what, you know, that's what really helped me. Going to the dpselfhelp.com site is good only if you stay on the in the recovery tab. Do not go to the horror stories, because it's like if you were a kid and you're really scared of the dark, and then the babysitter says, let's watch a scary movie. Like, why would you do that to yourself? You're really vulnerable.
That's why we're not diagnosing on the internet, right? Because it can be really terrifying.
Yes. And you're so vulnerable when you're in this state.
Yes.
And you're so desperate. So you need to remember, it's absolutely crucial to remember that how you think about whatever you're struggling with is the key to your recovery, because you have to retrain your brain. And if you start going down this hamster wheel of negativity, that's going to be what you feed it. And just surround yourself with positive people who believe you can heal. And I believe every single person, no matter what they're struggling with, I believe 100% in the recovery. I really do, because it's just your body out of balance.
I do too.
Cancer.
I do too.
Weight, whatever it is. And that's why I'm, you know, the last thing is to look for the root issues, because if your, for instance, depersonalization has to do with emotional trauma so you don't go down to the cellular level of the memory and diffuse that charge, then that's going to keep triggering you, which is going to keep you in this state of depersonalization. So if that's, I mean, I went like no stone unturned, which, like I said, can be triggering, because it can be like you feel like you can never get it all, or you can never, you know, heal yourself on every level. But it's really important, just like Sean O'Connor has this dpmanual.com. That's really helpful. Just surround yourself with people who are invested in recovering and not in saying their story. Because even talking about depersonalization stories can be super triggering. So if you know that triggers you, like I said, like start journaling. What triggers, and if it's a food, if it's like a weight issue, you know, and I like, you just start, okay, that's one of my triggers. And so now I'm going to, when I'm around, just say if this is a food trigger, okay, when I go to a party, I get triggered and I eat all this junk that they're serving. So knowing that, you know, what's going to be your new behavior when you're triggered. So once you start increasing your awareness around what your triggers are, then you can start designing a new behavior for that trigger. And that usually involves some kind of accountability. So telling someone that you really love who can help you through that. So it's all the same thing. It's imbalance, or like you were saying, it's called, you know, you were calling it extra weight, which is another form of imbalance, because you're weighted somewhere.
Yes.
That's keep causing you to be out of balance.
And so when I look at what, and it's often when we're looking at a rich, deep personal story like yours and how you've applied it, when someone is listening, it can also be this wide array of examples that you've left. And what I want to make sure folks know is that, you know, any of your specific journey, we're not saying this isn't prescriptive, you know, the hormonal pieces, the taking care of your body pieces, the ways that you were able to mindfully identify your triggers and start to manage them and start to manage your influences, that each person is going to need their own team of care and their own, you know, support holistically. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be, you know, with a counselor, with, if it's with an Ayurvedic practitioner, if it's with their doctor, you name it, so that they're starting to get that support. But you also mentioned that supportive person in your life. It might be a spouse, a friend of that's in your corner. I'm going to start to address this as you start to do your own rating and ranking of how big the triggers are, and you start to track it for yourself, mm-hmm. that there's so many beautiful nuggets, Cindy, that I heard you leave for people, including a couple of those very vital websites and resources. And so just knowing that, I want to thank you for bravely sharing your story, because even going through it again, it's both and. Like hearing what you've had to go through and what you've taken out of it is so powerful. And that whatever folks' takeaway is what is the weight? There is a way out from under it. And you've applied, my gosh, hundreds of attempts that all mattered, hundreds of thousands of attempts that all mattered, like you said, when you were relapsing, mm-hmm. right? But also hundreds of different ways that worked for you. And so I'm curious how you would wrap that up for our listeners, the ways that are going to work for each person individually, what you would leave.
Okay. Thank you. First of all, I'd say there, like, hire a coach. Like, I'm not, if you resonate with me, I'm available, but there might be someone else that you resonate with or who has, is able to guide you specifically for what you've gone through in your own life. Like, we're so afraid to hire out help, you know, we suffer for so much, when we don't need to. And I think I would have done that sooner, just for the accountability, you know? So there's that. And I'd say, if you can't afford a coach or a mentor, find someone who also wants to make a big change in their life. It doesn't have to be the same change as you. And then ask them if they'll be your accountability partner and set up a weekly meeting where you say, this is what I need to work on this week. And they can say what they want to work on. And you send each other supportive texts all week. But every week at those, for those 20 minutes, you each have 10 minutes to share and you support each other. So that's, you know, that's one thing. And then the other thing is to just not try to aim for the A+. Like when you try to be perfect,
yes,
or try to make too many changes at once, it's going to backfire and it's going to trigger your sympathetic nervous system. So it's better to do that. Aim for this. I would say if you have depersonalization disorder, aim for C-. If you have a ton of weight to lose, or you have an extreme imbalance like cancer, start even smaller where you're not so hard on yourself. It's really important to just think of that 1% improvement. I love James Clear's Atomic Habits. It's so good.
I just love the favorites.
Yeah. And if that'll help with triggers, if anyone's interested in learning how to tackle their triggers, to look at like the cue, craving, response, and reward, you know, the parts of the habit of what makes a habit, that helps increase awareness around that. And I use that all the time when I'm changing up my behavior around certain triggers. And then once you get to a point where you're stable, then you can fine tune, then you can bring it. Like, for instance, the mental clarity and my memory was literally shot after this. It wasn't until after I started to at least be in my body. And then it was even like a couple of years after that, then I started working on memory techniques.
Right.
So do the fine tuning later. Don't try to bite off more than you're able to manage. Keep it doable for your life, because everyone's life is different. Some people have like 5 kids, you know,
right.
Some people have really complicated situations. And so you have to modify it for you.
Beautiful.
And not compare yourself to anyone else's journey. You know, everyone has their own path and their own, you know, some people have a steeper hill to climb than others. But it's pain is pain. So
yes,
I'm like, wherever you're at and you're feeling pain and you're feeling discomfort, acknowledge that and don't say, oh, well, I have it better than most people, and then discount. You need to validate
yourself.
Yes. I when I see that, it breaks my heart, because validation is so important. It's so important to honor yourself and validate your suffering.
Yes.
So yeah, I guess that's what I'd leave everyone with is start really small. Do really small doable action steps. It could be just taking your vitamins every day, and that's all you can do.
Cindy, I'd really like to thank you for sharing your vulnerability, your wisdom, and the tools you've cultivated with us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Shannon.
For those of you who'd like to learn more about Cindy's programs, including her Habits for Thrive program that starts in January, you can reach her at beyondwellliving.com and it's cindymarshallhealthcoach@gmail.com. That would be Marshall with two L's. And my friends, thank you for being with us today, for spending your time, your focus with us. Next week on Love in the Mirror, we'll be looking at freedom. Freedom in your headspace, freedom from old patterns and ways to connect in the body. Some lovely mindfulness practices that my dear friend Janine Skipper will walk us through. And also some pretty inspiring pieces from her own journey. Until then, I'm Shannon Bodie. You can reach me at innerpeacerising.com. Thanks for being with us in the Love in the Mirror podcast. And let's keep remembering the peace that's possible right here. We'll see you soon. Thanks, everyone.